All right, good afternoon. Let's call this meeting of the House Military Veterans Affairs Committee to order. It is now 1:03 p.m., January 25th, in the State Capitol Gruenberg Room, number 120. Present, we have Representative Sponholz, Representative Rauscher, Representative Reinbold, Representative Parrish, and myself, Representative Tuck. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to do business. Please turn off your electronic devices so it doesn't interrupt our committee meeting. And before we begin, I would also like to thank Brian Glenn with House Records and Doug Burgess, who is moderating the meeting there in the back, and my committee aide, Charles Duncan. Today we have two items on the agenda. We have House Bill 262, the Military Spouse License by Representative Kawasaki, and then a continuation of House Bill 307, the Military Justice and Militia Civil Relief by myself, Representative Tuck. And joining us is Representative Sadler. Thank you, Mr. Sadler. This is the first hearing for House Bill 262. It is my intention to hear the bill, take public and invited testimony, and hold for amendments until the next meeting. So with that, Representative Kawasaki, if you don't mind approaching with your staff, William Joe Wallace, and please put your name on the record and provide us your overview. And joining us also is Vice Chair Representative Ledoux.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee. For the record, Representative Scott Kawasaki will represent District 1 in the city of Fairbanks, which borders the Fort Wainwright. Today I'm here to present House Bill 262. House Bill 262 is sort of a culmination of a lot of discussions that we've had over several years since implementation of the bill to expedite temporary courtesy licenses passed back in 2011. In 2011, House Bill 28 was passed to provide those expedited temporary courtesy licenses to eligible individuals, spouses of folks of Armed Services members, so that they could practice their trade without experiencing extensive wait times for licensure approval. For a military spouse, expedited temporary courtesy license is the fastest way and fastest method of obtaining licensure and getting back to their profession. Similar legislation was also passed by several other states. However, several states like Washington and Connecticut also included a reporting mechanism to the legislature and Joint Armed Services Committee so that the state could track the executive branch progress of implementation of those occupational boards. House Bill 28 didn't include a reporting requirement when it was passed. In the fall of last year, legislators voiced some concern that the full implementation of House Bill 28 was not yet completed and that not all occupational boards were aware of the seven-year-old statute. While questions remain, the bill simply seeks to strengthen the ability of those military spouses to obtain occupational licenses in an efficient and expedited manner as prescribed by law. House Bill 262 seeks to amend Title 8 to include the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development so that they prepare an annual report of those courtesy licenses issued in the previous fiscal year. This simple reporting mechanism will help to facilitate communications between the legislative branch and the executive branch and the occupational boards that oversee those licensed. It'll also aid in making sure that those military spouses will get back into the workforce as soon as possible. The passage of House Bill 262 would improve communications between those boards, the departments, and the legislature, and improve efficiency and awareness about what opportunities are available. I respectfully urge support of House Bill 262, a corrected bill that's in the interest of improving communications and accountability and helping those Alaskan families transition to life in the state. And with that, I've got another committee to start that started 4 minutes ago to open up. My staff aide, William John Wallace, will be here for technical questions on the bill. Right?
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Representative Savage, do you have a question for this bill sponsor before we left?
I do, actually. It has to do with the drafting, so it might be best to answer by the sponsor. Thank you. Through the Chair, Representative Kawasaki. The bill reporting in the second page, paragraph F, would require the Department of Commerce, Committee on Economic Development, to submit a report both to the Senate Secretary and Chief Clerk and to the Joint Armed Services Committee. And I look at the jurisdiction for committees of reform, it's not really clear, but why would you want the report to go to JASC and not Military and Veterans Affairs? And if it's going to the Senate Secretary and Chief Clerk, why does it need to go to committee anyway?
That's a technical question I'll leave for Mr. John Wallace, but I will say that I think the purpose of it going to the Joint Armed Services Committee is because it'll get to more legislators more quickly. It will go to the Senate Secretary, it will go to the House Clerk. Sometimes we do get those reports, and other times we don't, through the chair, sorry.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And if you don't mind putting your name and affiliation on the record, and if you have any additional comments on that question.
Yes, sir. Thank you. William Jed Wallace with Representative Scott Kawasaki, Staff Representative Scott Kawasaki. Through the chair, Representative Sadler, regarding your previous question, the report would be presented to JASC annually, whereas it would be presented to both reports, so two reports from the first year, and then the second year would be biannually presented to the legislature. And so the idea of it being presented to Joint Armed Services Committee is so that information could get to the military community more efficiently, and then that would be passed on to legislators who might have communities that may more directly be affected with what that report entails. The sample legislation that we modeled ours off of from Connecticut and Washington included a reporting mechanism, and they did things the same way. Their variant of the Joint Armed Services Committee is where this information was initially sent to. So that is what we're following in track of that.
And follow up on the topic?
Follow up, Representative Sadler.
Did you consider drafting it such that the one-year report would go to everybody 1 year, and then the two-year binary report would go to everybody the second year? Just provide the, if your goal is to provide the information to as many people in as broad a range as possible, providing the binary report to everybody might be a better way to do that.
Sure. Through the chair, certainly. And we could take another look at that.
I'd like to have
consideration.
Yeah. Any other questions for a bill sponsor?
I've got several.
Okay, Representative Sadler.
Okay, just remind me, who sponsored the original courtesy license bill back in 2011?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, Representative Sadler, I have misplaced that in my notes, but I could get that back to you immediately.
Following up
question.
Thank you, sir. I heard the sponsor say that this bill will increase the communications between different boards and commissions. How would this reporting to the legislature improve communication between boards and commissions?
So, through the chair, Representative Stanley. So the requirements of the report state that the the department work with the board and to draft this report. And then so additionally another thing is the department efforts to inform the military community and the member of timber. So the idea here is that with this report and the department needing to compile it, they would work with the various occupational boards, see what is being done, what could be done better, and to fit the requirements of the report as outlined in the bill, and then have that submitted to the Joint Armed Services Committee and then the legislature biannually. So that the idea behind that is that would facilitate communication. I understand, well, the DOD, and I believe this is in the bill packet, but the Department of Defense suggested that states that were having difficulties with the implementation of their occupational spouse license situation would take a look at Washington and Connecticut's examples, because apparently their communication there was better. So that's what we're thinking.
I might telegraph Mr. through the chair, Mr. Irwin, that instead of sending the information to just the boards that are authorized to issue the temporary license, we might encourage a little bit of initiative by sending the notice to all boards with the possibility they would say, hey, this is a good idea, we'll start doing this too. So, again, I appreciate the desire to make more publicly available and known the information about these courtesy licenses, so I might come back to you with an amendment to broaden that distribution.
Yeah. Through the chair, thank you, Representative Sather, for the suggestion. I'll be hoping that.
And if I may, Representative Sather, which boards and commissions would you like again?
That would be all boards and commissions, there's about 150, 60.
Okay.
Basically, we can shame those that don't by showing a good example of those that do.
Okay, thanks, Representative Sather. Representative Rosher.
Thank you, Chairman. Do you anticipate a fiscal note at all before this is over?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, no, we do not. The department may be able to speak more if they believe that there would be any additional costs or man hours associated with this, but no, we do not anticipate a fiscal note.
All right, thank you.
Any further questions for the bill sponsor?
One of the other that you're bringing. Who are your last name again?
Judd Wallace.
Through the chair. Judd Wallace. Thank you. Mr. Judd Wallace. Through the chair, and the sponsor had said that reporting would increase the executive branch activity. Is that kind of this? I'd like to ask why. Is that the same theory that if more people know about it, they'll take advantage of this opportunity? Or?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, yes, there have been some concerns that were brought up to our office by the Department of Defense and similarly by the, through the updated preliminary findings of the Eielson Air Force Base Regional Growth Plan. And in there, there was a focus group among military families to see what potential challenges were felt in coming up to Eielson in light of the F-35s. And one of the comments made, and this is included in the bill packet, was anyone who has a license in a different state is required to get a new license or certification in Alaska. This is a challenge. Well, the point of HB 28 was to reduce this sort of challenge back in 2011, so the fact that one persists suggests that we can fix that. And we believe we've identified some of the issues, and with the department just not saying the department doesn't have an active role now, but facilitating the department further, getting their fingers in those regulations and checking with their boards, that will hopefully get us where we want to go.
And last comment, if I could.
Okay, Representative Sather, didn't Representative Ledoux.
I'm looking at just the last section, G, on page 2. The department shall encourage the boards to designate a single employee to serve as the public contact point. I used to work in boards and commissions. I know that each board currently does have such a person, but it might be worth a plus up to make sure they all know who it is and know that that's part of their duties. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Sather. Representative Ledoux.
You know, I'm actually not sure if this is a question or a comment. Is comments okay here, Tim?
Sure is, yes.
So, I think everything here is really a good idea. But it's kind of really sad that this bill originally was passed in, or the bill about temporary licenses was passed in 2011. And it looks like the boards and commissions aren't getting it to the extent that the legislature has to pass a bill to make sure that the boards and commissions actually understand what we've done. It seems like, you know, something has slipped through the cracks in the executive branch, because I would think that, and this is the executive branch in a couple of administrations, because you pass a bill that's supposed to do something. I mean, shouldn't the administration be letting their boards and commissions know what's available?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, we were asking ourselves those same questions, and I believe, you know, it was sort of a matter of letting the foundation settle a little bit in order then to see the cracks. Some of it I don't think was really anticipated,
And for example, we believe that what one of the problems may be is for, so if you were to, you know, say you were an acupuncturist and you're, pardon me, acupuncturist and from another state, you had a license, and you were to come up, and the first thing you'd probably do is you would Google Alaska acupuncture license, and you would go on there, and the first link that you would click would be a, you know, initial license or renewals. There's nothing immediately on that page that mentions the expedited military spouse licensing. That's off to the side under military licensing. Now, I'm a, you know, or whatever the situation may be, your spouse, you're not military personnel, so you might not think that that directly applies to you. But if you don't click on that, you will miss the fact that you need to have an additional paperwork to get you that expedited license privilege. And so, you know, it seems to be there. I think the department is doing a lot to try to have that available. But some of those issues I just don't think were necessarily anticipated. And the idea of this report, we can look at it and reflect over what we see in the department with the boards and in the legislature. And hopefully that will fix these problems.
I would like to add that we also have Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Military Veterans Affairs Doyle in the audience, and we also have Deputy Commissioner from Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Mr. Parody, as well.
I guess sometimes I just see that entities, departments do reports on things. And then those reports aren't necessarily perused to the greatest extent possible. And it would seem like, I would think, that maybe a concerted effort might be made to work with the administration to try to figure out, you know, how to redesign a website if that's the problem.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. I also want to point out that House Bill 28, I just looked it up real quick, was introduced by, when we had co-sponsorships, Thomas, Heron, and Feige, all three of which are no longer serving in office. Representative Swanholtz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have less of a question and more of a comment, and that is I was just looking at my notes from our last committee meeting when we heard testimony from Sarah Chambers, who's Deputy Director at the Workforce Investment Board, and one of the insights that she shared was that there was 13,396 applications that were submitted for certification or licensure, I believe it was last year, and that of those, about 70 were veterans or military spouse related. And so this may be the case of sort of the needle in the haystack, which a light could be shown on the needle through, you know, House Bill 262, which would just elevate it, you know, elevate the issue and just keep it on people's minds, because when you have over 13,000 applications, I think sometimes you have this sort of natural propensity to sort of lean towards volume, you know, volume processing and less towards the exceptions. And what we're talking about here are sort of unique exceptions, and they're exceptions that we need to make note of. And so I commend the sponsor on bringing forward the bill.
Okay, thank you. Any further comments?
No, sir.
Any other questions? Any questions for the department? Okay.
Actually, I've got a question. I'll defer to Vice Chair.
Okay, Vice Chair
Ledoux. Actually, I've got a question for Mr. Parody, Commissioner Parody.
And if you please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Fred Parody. I serve as Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and I'm glad to join you today.
Representative Ledoux.
So I would imagine that quite a few of these boards and commissions that people would like to get temporary courtesy licenses would be under your auspices?
Mr. Through the Chair, Representative Ledoux, just to put some data on the table from a 30,000-foot view, and then we'll circle down. In corporations, business, and professional licensing, we handle roughly 225,000 either renewals or licenses each year, roughly a third corporation, a third business, a third professional. In the professional licensing category, we have 43 professions that the legislature has seen fit to regulate, and 21 of them have boards.
So, I guess, follow up through the chair. So, now that this bill and the previous presentation has shed some light on the fact that military spouses are having some difficulties getting the courtesy licenses which were enacted into law in 2011. Do you have any ideas what we can do about that?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Ledoux. Again, if I might offer a fuller perspective for your consideration, we were certainly responsive to the bill in 2011. It has our attention. We share with you the eagerness, if you will, to serve our military personnel. Subsequent to the passage of the bill in 2011, there are three best practices established by the Department of Defense, each of which we have enacted. One is licensure by endorsement or credentials, where you simply look at their license in another state. If those credentials approximate our requirements, we then move to temporary licensure, which gives you a license for 365 days. While you get the balance of any missing paperwork in order, and we expedite those applications. If it's a military application, it goes to the head of the list. As mentioned by Representative Sponholz, that's 70 licenses in 13,000 new applications in a given year. I thought her needle in a haystack analogy was appropriate, but we do have our focus on that needle that we serve our residents. Now, to the point made by the previous speaker, if you go to our webpage, military licensure is a sidebar on our quick links, and that's because we put everything that's in common across those 43 professions in one link. And we need to look to see if that can be more plain. But we don't rely on that link. That link takes you to this page, and it takes you to a one-page form that clarifies your military status. But regardless of whether you fill out that form, when our examiners are looking at that application, if they pick up anything military on the application, it goes to the head of the list. I also wanted to note that Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I also want to note that relative to the Eielson Regional Growth Plan, there is a Tiger team that meets in Fairbanks because of the growth that's coming with the deployment of F-35s. We participate in those calls on a regular basis. I was on the call when that Eielson Regional Growth Plan PowerPoint was presented that noted this potential problem and spoke to it that we are supportive to the needs of military spouses, military veterans, military members to licensure. So we are aware and focused on the project, the problem, and we're also happy to do better.
So do you think this bill will help you to do better, will help you to remain focused on things?
We are neutral as to the bill. The addition in statute of an annual reporting requirement is the will of the legislature. Communications is always good. We're a phone call away, and we're glad to report to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Through the Chair, Mr. Parody. Help us understand how many boards or commissions currently do offer military courtesy licenses. You gave us the countdown, the breakdown, that of 43 professions, 21 have boards. How many of those 21 boards do have provision for military?
According to the data that's in front of me, and I can further respond to you through the chair, Representative Sadler, we can further respond subsequent to this meeting, but I have a list in front of me that is 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 boards that do not, and typically that's because either they don't have an exam requirement or they're unique to Alaska such to that you have to be able to address Alaska specifics. And examples of that would be registered or assistant guide outfitters who have to be able to demonstrate knowledge of Alaska's game laws, big game transporter who has a reporting requirement in the transportation of big game, marine pilots who step on board and take command of large ships that might be going into a harbor unfamiliar to that captain or through the Wrangell Narrows, etc. So the those that don't have are limited to specific reasons.
And just to probe it for you, Owen, if someone does a military spouse avails himself of one of these professional licenses, do they pay a fee and or not? And if they do pay a fee, is that credited to their eventual permanent, as it were, professional license?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I'll have to confirm this answer, but it's my understanding is they pay a fee like any other applicant.
And I have actually heard, to follow, I have heard some folks who are in the license field who certainly want to support the military, but have some concerns about being asked to, you know, support the licenses of perhaps a competitor.
Sure. Representative Rusher.
Thank you, through the chair. I'll just follow up on what the representative from the Muldoon area was going with there. I think the last question was, with this legislation help you guys to accomplish better? Can better be accomplished without the bill?
Again, through the chair, Representative Rasser, we're neutral as to the bill, but we certainly have our attention focused here. And frankly, with the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, on the commerce side, the military side, the military expansion with the F-35s in Fairbanks is of keen interest to us, that we're supportive, whether it's through ADA or AHFC or our department, that those growth plans come to fruition and bear fruit for Alaskans. So we're paying attention is what I'm trying to say in short version.
Sure. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a representative for J-Bear, I would actually ask the representative of the department not to keep rubbing it in that Fairbanks got the F-35s, but we didn't. We were doing that. But actually, I've got a serious question, Mr. Chair. So just to be sure, does the Department of Business Professional Licensing currently designate a single person to serve as the point of public contact? Is that something that needs to be redirected? Or?
Mr. Chairman, I would note that Deputy Division Director Sarah Chambers is the lead, and one aspect that I wrote in my notes that I failed to mention is we do, across those boards, have, I want to say approximately the 21 boards, 150 or so members, and they go through a new board member orientation and a board training, and those materials each include reference to military licensing and the specific requirements. So we try to build it into our front loading of our new board members.
Representative Nadeau.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether after the questions are completed with Commissioner Paraday, whether we might be able to question Commissioner Dole or maybe Sarah Chambers.
Okay, I don't have Sarah Chambers available at the moment. We also have Dale Vandy Hay with the defense. He's a defense state liaison. Yeah, he's going to testify, but we can also ask him questions as well. Also, he's online.
Mr. Chairman, I want to note, just for the joy of interaction, that Sarah Chambers can't be divided into four at one. We have four CBLPL hearings simultaneously. I'm the fourth string.
And if I may, we also had her here last week when we last committee hearing, where we went over a lot of the kinks that we need to work out in making sure that things run smooth for spouses and their licensing.
We all share that goal.
Yeah. Thank you. Deputy Commissioner Dole, would you care to join us?
For the record, Deputy Commissioner Dole, Bob Dole, State of Alaska Department of Military Veterans Affairs, Mr. Chair. I'm available to answer any questions you may have on this.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux?
So, Commissioner Dole, I was just wondering when families come on base, whether part of the orientation for them is somebody saying, hey, by the way, if you're an acupuncturist or if you're this or you're that, that there's a special courtesy license. Is that made clear to military spouses through the orientation procedure or some other procedure?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, this is Deputy Commissioner Dole. The short answer is there is not a mandatory briefing for what we call military dependents, for those military spouses or kids of service members who are coming onto our bases in Alaska. The service members are required to attend briefings, however, the spouses are not. So that the spouse may remember, the service member may come home to their spouse that night and said, by the way, I found out today as an acupuncturist you go to this site, but that's completely controlled by Department of Defense. At this time, spouses are not briefed, at least in U.S. locations.
So you, through the chair, so you mentioned that there's not a mandatory briefing or orientation. Is there some sort of an orientation for spouses who want it? An unmandatory or a voluntary?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, Deputy Commissioner Dole, they may, as an option, attend the in-briefing that their service member's spouse goes to. There is not one that is focused on spouse needs in the new location.
Follow-up, Vice Chair.
Without making it a federal case, so to speak, could there be?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the briefings or orientations that are given to service members and their families coming into our Alaska military bases are controlled, unfortunately, by the federal government. They haven't given us sovereignty over those yet. So at this point, we could reach out to things such as the Citizens Actions Group or other groups that, of which Rep. Sadler participates regularly with Jaber. I used to see him at all the meetings to ask the base to consider that. However, it would be a federal military decision as to what they offered.
Okay, Rep. Sadler and Rep. Reinbold.
Thank you, and certainly don't want to devolve that over to the federal government, but I think there's no better mass medium than the military spouses, wives organizations, the top three, the NCO's wives. There's informal exchanges of information that I'm sure operate pretty well that don't necessarily need a federal program for. And actually, I should ask the question. I know that DMVA, through the chair, Mr. Dole, now that DMVA puts out some good publications on the benefits available to veterans in Alaska, but do you have any kind of publications or what resources do you have available for military spouses, knowing that it's not your primary responsibility?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, at this time we do not have publications tailored to military spouses in Alaska.
And that's fair. That's not your mission. So.
Okay, thank you. Representative Reinbold.
Thank you. I've decided to go down this rabbit hole because my resistance is weak today. But I think this is a really important issue. And I tell you, I have been overseas and part of an expo, and they did virtually nothing, even in the spouses club. I mean, it was ridiculous. So, you know, the husband might get all the information, and it's never distributed to the wife. And so, I mean, I think this is an issue. I really do. And so maybe that's why we only have, what was it, 1/11 of 1% or something like that, 70 out of 70,000. I can't remember what the numbers were a couple weeks ago. But anyway, I do think that we need some sort of distribution where there is an awareness. And this information is distributed to the spouses because there could be a communication gap there. Anyway, thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, Major General Hummel, I trust, can reach out to the ALCOM commander and the other field and or flag and general officers in state to explore what mechanisms they may have available to facilitate this.
And you're going to get back with us through the chair?
Through the chair?
Yeah, that's what I said, through the chair. Through the chair, will you get back with us?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, we will, or General Hummel will be down here herself for the JASC and may discuss it there too.
If you want, you can get the report over to me and I'll pass it out to everybody else. I think that's the request. Thank you. Any further questions for Deputy Commissioner? Any questions for Department of Defense? We have online. All right. Thank you very much. At this moment, we'll open it up to public testimony. Public testimony has been opened for House Bill 262. Is there anybody in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 262? Seeing nobody in the room, we do have someone online that would like to testify. The first that we have is Dale Vandy Hay, who is the Defense State Liaison. Dale, can you hear us?
Yeah.
Can you hear some noise back there, Dale, if you can speak into your microphone?
I sure can. Can you hear me?
Okay, that sounds much better. Yes, Dale, if you don't mind, put your name and affiliation on the record and go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Yes,
thinking of your microphone.
This is Dale Gamble. Can you hear me?
Yes, Dale, if you don't mind, put your information on the record and go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, good afternoon.
Hey, Dale, I think you need to turn down whatever you're listening to or monitoring us through. It seems like it'd be a long delay. If you can just speak into the microphone and mute anything else back there that might be interfering.
Okay, do you want to
Yeah, it's you.
I know, that's because he's listening to something else.
Speak into the microphone and mute anything else.
And he's not on speakerphone.
The future.
Are you ready, Dale?
Okay, I think this is going to be better. I just muted the video conference that I'm listening to. Can you hear me now, please?
That sounds great. Thank you so much. That way I don't have to hear myself repeat myself over and over again. Feel free with your testimony.
First of all, I'm Dale Vandehey. I'm with the Defense State Liaison Office, which is a Department of Defense office under the Military Community and Family Policy. Many of you know Mark Sansusi, who I'm essentially subbing for. He's out of pocket for a couple months. And this is an issue that the department has been working as one of our 10 key issues that we work through the years. Yes, it was birthed somewhat in the 2011 timeframe. You all, Alaska, Middle East, supports our issues, and we're pretty much first out of the chute on this one also, to try to help military members and spouses who relocate, whether they're service members getting out of the service that want to settle in Alaska, or spouses that come with their military member to an installation in Alaska. This is part of this effort. I would like to say my claim to fame was I was a support group commander at Elmendorf in the late 90s. So I do have a frame of reference on the challenges of moving particularly to Alaska. This particular effort is probably the number one challenge even today for military spouses who are joining their spouse as they move around the country. I am one of eight liaisons, and we cover the 50 states. Now, I'm calling you from San Antonio, Texas, but I was asked to cover Alaska during Mark Sansusi's absence. And I can attest to the fact that this problem hasn't gone away. Why did it come back in 2017, 2018 as it has? And the reason why is because the Department of Defense was still hearing that this was a problem, even though all states had passed laws to work through issues of licensure by endorsement, temporary license, and expedited processes, but it didn't seem to be getting much better. So the department commissioned the University of Minnesota, and they did a report on military spouse licensure portability examination. And the results across the board are that more can be done. Now, granted, in the hearing just 2 days ago, on the whole issue of occupational licensure, there was a lot of discussion about the whole issue of academic credentials, the whole issue of what boards are or are not doing. What this particular bill will do is reinforce the need to give perhaps further attention to this continuing dilemma. In answer to the question earlier about, well, what does a base do? The base has a spouse employment manager who is in typically either the Army Community Services Center or the Eminent Family Readiness Flight. And they do everything they can to help a spouse land at their new location. But typically when you are a professional spouse with a certification or a license, nurse, teacher, physical therapist, dental hygiene, etc. You typically know what to do, meaning you know that it's controlled by the board in that state, and you typically go to the board. You might go out to the base to see if you can find a job, but the base typically, or the post, is typically not in a position to hold your hand in order to talk to a board, whatever board it is, and there are many in each state, in order to get your license either renewed or certified in some way. Now, in most cases, your certification to get this licensure by endorsement needs to be substantially equivalent. And that's where people run into problems, because there's many variables involved in getting a license. So the onus is on the spouse to contact the board, and that's why it's reassuring to hear that the boards are doing everything they can. This is an opportunity to maybe improve that process to make it better, so that when the military spouse, and I know and I realize it's only 70 based on the statistics of the thousands that were mentioned, but these members, as you well know, they might raise their hand as I did to come into the service, but whether or not you stay or not is around the kitchen table, and we're just trying to facilitate the transition. And we really appreciate the attention you've given to this and all the other issues that you work on behalf of military members and their spouses. Thank you for your time, and thank you for the opportunity for Representative Kawasaki to sponsor this legislation. Thank you. Any questions, please?
And thank you. Yes, we do have some questions. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, sir. Through the chair, just a My general experience is the top vocations for military spouses tends to be those that are more portable, frankly, teachers, real estate, healthcare, business. But I guess I'll ask you, who would know the real statistics, in your experience, what are the most likely vocations for temporary licenses?
The ones that you've mentioned, teachers, nurses, are definitely in those categories. There is an effort across the country to advocate for compacts, interstate compacts, and they're currently being worked in the areas of physical therapy, emergency medical technicians, in addition to nursing and psychological people in psychology. The point being is that these two, these compacts that are being populated in all the 50 states by those particular associations are opportunities for military spouses to be assisted. In further answer to your question, though, the University of Minnesota report zeroed in on particular skills that are also needed and used by military spouses, being cosmetology, dental hygiene, massage therapy, mental health counseling, occupational therapy, and you mentioned the real estate commission. So those, in a nutshell, I guess a strong eight or so are those skills.
Could you report those, through the chair, those last couple, cosmetology, massage therapist, occupational therapist, real estate, and I missed a couple others.
Did you hear the question? Would you say you could repeat the last of those occupations, the last four?
Massage therapy, dental hygiene, cosmetology. And the others I had already mentioned are physical therapy, emergency medical services, of course, nurses, and psychology.
Right. Thank you.
Does that help?
It does, sir. Thank you.
It sure does. Thank you. And now a question from Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in previous discussions, the question had been raised, what's being done to accommodate people with teaching licenses, which might not fall under commerce and economic development. What is there that we can do to facilitate a military spouse with a teaching credential coming to Alaska and being able to serve in one of our schools? And that can either, no, Mr. Paradis shaking his head no. Okay.
Okay, is that a question for...
either the gentleman on the phone or for the bill sponsor.
Okay. Del Vandy Hay, you mind taking a stab at that one first?
I suppose I could broaden the question to being what are other states doing more effectively than Alaska that we could cheat off of them on?
This is Dale Vandenberg, if I may. This is another one of our key issues because teachers do not fall typically under the purview of these licensing compacts. And so what we're working with is this particular item of how do you transfer a certificate. In the area of a temporary certificate, a state such as Indiana, I believe Oregon, provides a 3-year temporary certificate. So that when a teacher would come into your state, initial qualifications are required, but that sometimes they just don't have everything you want, like state history or whatever that may be. But they're given a temporary license for 3 years. Or there are other options, 18 months and then another 18 months, which is pretty much in your purview already on the initial bill you passed on this particular item in House Bill 28 back in 2011. That's already in there, but it doesn't cover teachers because teachers are not under the auspices of that bill. The point being is that if the Department of Education was rolled into this process and had that same requirement, one state I'm familiar with, they get a year temporary certificate and then it is can be renewed up to additional year at a time, up to 3 years. So I would say that's the critical one. The other is the expedited piece where, you know, sometimes the individual might not be able to go back to the five schools that they've taught at in the last 15 years as a military spouse. Things can be done to perhaps speed up that process, or maybe they don't have a particular, haven't taught within 2 years of the past 5 years because they were overseas where it's difficult to teach if you're a military spouse, because those positions, unless it's a job school, typically go to the foreign nationals. So those are some ideas in the teaching piece. I hope that helps.
Thank you. It is useful, and I'll speak further with the bill sponsor about it.
Any further questions to our testifier? Representative Rauscher.
Yes, through the chair. I just want to know, that list that we were given, is that a finite list or an example list?
If I dare to answer, I think it was a list of the most common, but Bill Van Hay, if you don't mind answering that question.
The list that Dale Van Hay gave was not a finite list. It was an example of typically the most used populations of professional military spouses. But there are other occupations.
So through the chair.
That was in Russia.
If I could. So if you were, say, you were married to a plumber or a general contractor, or something of that nature, and you are the person being transferred to Alaska in the military, and these are the types of licenses your spouse would hold, are those excluded also?
Are the plumbers and electricians excluded? Is that the question?
I guess I was thinking for general contractors, all of those types of licenses. I imagine that they're excluded.
It all depends on whether or not they're currently covered. by the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, who handles most of those skills, and I don't have a listing of those skills. But if not, then if you want those particular skills covered, then those professional boards could be included in this process.
Through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Rusher.
Through the chair, is there a way we can get a list from wherever it's supposed to come from of what?
Yeah, I think that would come from the Department of Commerce, Community, Economic Development, and the original House Bill 28 I have here in front of me. You can take a look at it too, but it's basically licenses. I'm not sure how far it goes into professional licenses. So if you have a contractor's license, I don't know if that would be so easy to transfer. I think it's mostly referring to professional licenses.
Dental hygienist?
Which would be a professional license, yeah. Any further questions for, and I'll try to get a list from the department. Representative Renbold.
And thank you, through the chair. Just to piggyback on Rauscher's, a lot of females are actually enlisted as well. So if they have a spouse, you know, that are following them around the country, maybe these are, you know, the electric ones and the general contractors, things like that, maybe something very important. And maybe Ron Clark or Bob, you can explain to us, you know, how many females, you know, is there a rising number through the chair? I mean, this is with the indulgence of the chair. If there's a rising number of women enlisted and then the spouses are actually there.
Okay, just want to remind everybody we're under public testimony. We have somebody that's testifying. Can you redirect our questions to the testifier? Is there any further questions that we have for the Defense State Liaison Office? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. We'll go on to the next testifier. David Meese, are you available?
Yeah, I am. Can you hear me?
Yep, we got you. Go ahead and state your name and affiliation, and please continue on or start your testimony for us.
All right. David Meese, Alaska Policy Forum. We appreciate Representative Kawasaki bringing this bill up because it gives you a chance to look at how the system is currently working, and it looks like it has some major issues that need to be worked on. One of the things we've noticed out in our private schools is that we have a number of military spouses that are licensed in teaching working at the private schools because it requires too much money out of their pocket to train to become Alaska certified. And we do have a temporary system for teachers, but it's only good for a year, so anything that would allow that to be a longer process, like a year with a year up, another year with a year up. And then there's that break in service that the liaison was talking about. If you're coming from overseas, Germany, England, Japan, Korea, and you have not been able to teach in the local schools, you might have a gap in your service, but be still holding a professional license in teaching given out by a university. So anything you can do to include that, because we have a shortage of teachers in Alaska, so anything you can do to include that into this process would be helpful. And then on the flip side of it, almost all of the children that are in school, and I was a military dependent for many years, I went to the local schools. And to not use the local schools to let the moms or the dads know that they can get a temporary license is not using a tool that's in front of you. So you don't just have to concentrate on, you know, getting information out of bases. The information could be going home with the parents when they register their kids at the local school. Say, hey, you have an opportunity here, we're looking for teachers, we're looking for hygienists, we're looking for whatever the careers are you're focusing on. So the opportunity to look back at this and see how it's working, I think you can pretty much take a look at it and go like, well, not working as designed, there's room for improvement, and we would encourage you and the members of the committee to take a look at, do you want to include teaching in one of the licensures that you can get a temporary license to work at the state of Alaska? Because right now, most military spouses that have a degree in education are not working in the public school system. They work in the private school system simply because there are too many hurdles to jump. They know they're going to go back to their home base, Alabama or Georgia, where they can pick up a job down there. So you're wasting resources that you have available to you as military spouses by not moving it over.
You're fading away, David, if you don't mind, keep talking into your microphone.
Okay, go ahead. I'm fading away. All right. I was just going to conclude with we really like the effort of this. We think that the reach out has to be there. This bill accomplishes that by making you take a look back at, is commerce the best place to get this information about licensure out? And we would just like to add that putting in an ability for teachers to be able to work in states their spouses are deployed in Alaska, that hold valid certificates in other states and have experience, you're wasting a resource if you do not allow that to be easier. That concludes my testimony.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions for Mr. Neese with the Alaska Policy Forum? Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You may have heard Mr. Neese, the previous testifier, point out that Oregon provides a three-year temporary teaching license and that the existing statute, as you rightly point out, does not extend to DEED. Do you think a three-year temporary license for people in the teaching profession would substantively respond to the need that you see?
Yes, that would, or if you just had a one-year license.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Neese. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify? I don't see anybody else online, so I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. Public testimony is closed. Are there any further questions that we have for the administration or from anyone else? Did we ask your question earlier, Representative Rainbow?
It's okay.
Any other further questions? Okay, so we will set House Bill 262 aside. Please provide any amendments to this to my office by 10 a.m. on Thursday, February 8th. Going on, now we're going to move up to House Bill 307, the Military Justice and Militia Civil Relief. Do we have any further questions from the department or from any committee members on this one? We do have two amendments that have been prepared based on our last meeting. And in the room, we do have Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs with us. And hang on here a second. I believe online also we have, I have to enter in a password to find out who's there. We also should have Lieutenant Colonel Chris Weaver online. But let me try to find out where I will know how to do that. Just a quick briefings. Okay, going back on record. I should let my moderator make it back to his desk before I try jumping in. Thank you for your help. Appreciate that. Okay, so we do have, again, Dale Van Hay with the Defense State Liaison's Office online. We also have Lieutenant Colonel Chris Weaver with Alaska National Guard. And we also have Captain Blake Circle with Alaska National Guard online to be able to answer any questions as well. As a reminder, we have Deputy Commissioner Bob Doyle for the Department of Military Veterans Affairs in the audience. We have two amendments before us. We had a discussion last week about including the member of the organized, to include all service members, whether they're a member of the organized militia or not. That way it's all encompassing, so we have the same standard for all of our military people. And then another amendment that wanted to follow the alcohol and drug policies throughout our Title 26 statutes as we go forward. With that, Madam Vice Chair, would you like to offer a particular amendment?
I move amendment number one.
Okay. Version.
Version 30-LS1099/A.1.
Okay, just make sure everybody has a copy of the amendment. Doesn't like people have copies of the amendment, we'll take a brief at ease.
I was gonna.
The House Military Veterans Affairs Committee back to order. Everybody has a copy of Amendment Number 1. Representative Rumble.
Mr. Chairman, I object for purposes of discussion and also for a friendly amendment.
Okay, thank you. So what Amendment Number 1 is attempting to do is basically keeping consistent with the language that we had earlier that was pointed out on House Bill 307, because we had some areas that, dealt with drugs and other areas that dealt with alcohol. And Lieutenant Colonel Chris Weaver, are you available? Can you walk us through this a little bit?
Yeah, so I'm driving in here, but I'll try to do my best.
Oh dear. Okay, go ahead and proceed.
Sir, can you describe the amendment again for me, please?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I'll just go over the amendment real quick. Actually, I'm looking for my original copy of the bill.
Yeah. There's the bill.
Okay. So what we were looking at last week was, I think, Section 22. Going back to Section 22, we had... looking at page 10, actually starting on page 10, looking at line 15, we have here, a member of the militia who unlawfully drinks an alcoholic beverage with a prisoner may be punished up to by 1 year of confinement. What we're wanting to do there is saying not just drinking, but unlawfully uses a drug with a prisoner. Page 12, line 3. Going on, it was just bringing in the drug component to all the alcohol references that we have. Page 12, line 3, we have drunkenness and other incapacitating offenses on section 2605-860. A member of the militia other than sentinel or lookout who, one, is found under the influence of alcohol while on duty, or two, as a result of indulgence in any alcoholic beverage or drug, is unable to properly perform the member's duty, may be punished up to 1 year of confinement. We're taking page 12, line 3, and adding drug in there as well. So, under one who was found underneath the influence of alcohol or a drug while on duty, or two. So we're adding that in there. Page 12, line 9. Going down a little bit further, a member of the militia who, while a prisoner, is drunk, adding in there, or under the influence of a controlled substance, shall be punished as a court-martial may direct. That's making it illegal drug. Page 12, line 9, following direct, adding in this subsection, controlled substance has a meaning given in AS 2605-870. And then page 12, line 13, following alcohol, insert or a drug. So we're just trying to say not just alcohol, but any illegal drugs as well. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly do not mean to be disruptive, but and I haven't thoroughly gone through the definitions, but I think in one part of this amendment, the fourth bullet item, it does reference this correct definition of controlled substance, but I'm afraid there's other places where we're adding in use of the word illegal uses drugs and drugs. So I'm going to ask a general question. Are these according to state law, according to federal law? Is there a definition for a drug? Is a drug necessarily an illegal drug, et cetera? Those kinds of questions. I'd appreciate some clarity.
Okay.
This is Lieutenant Colonel Chris Weaver, Alaska National Guard. Through the chair, well,
Lieutenant Colonel Weaver, we can't hear you. We hear a little bit in there. Can you get a little bit closer to the microphone?
I'll do my best here. Representative Sadler, in some sections, it doesn't matter what kind of drug you're on, whether it's legal or illegal.
Lieutenant Colonel Weaver, we're still having a little bit of trouble. Is there any way we can get you on a landline, perhaps? Are you driving at the moment?
Yes.
Okay.
You come on, speak if you get too close.
There we go.
Okay, that's much better. Continue.
Right, but I'm yes, sir. So to answer your question, some in the performance of the duties, it doesn't matter what kind of drug you're on. It could be legal or illegal. Other portions of the ACMJ, it's illegal just as a matter of being in the military. So it has to be an illegal drug. I hope that answers your question, Representative Sadler.
Through the chair, while I could hear your words, I'm not quite sure of the import. Could you say that again? Is it necessary to define drugs as legal or illegal or controlled substance? I mean, is there one way to do this consistently throughout the bill, or is it necessary to have the distinct verbiage in each individual case?
Blake, Captain Circle, can you answer that question, please?
Yeah, is Captain Blake Circle, are you available, and did you hear the question?
Chair, I guess I'd feel more comfortable if I saw consistent language throughout every reference to alcohol, drug, illegal drug, controlled substance, just to make sure that there's consistency.
Excuse me just for a second. Let's hear from one person at a time first. Representative Sadler, go ahead and continue.
Yeah, I just want to clarify. So I would have more comfort if each time in this bill I saw reference to drugs, I saw consistent nomenclature, either drug or illegal drug or controlled substance or something. Where I get a little bit distracted or concerned about lack of consistency is when I see different words used that might potentially have different technical definitions. It's hard to have a consistent application. So if there's a reason for it, I'd like to hear that. But if there's not, I would come back with an amendment to make those consistent.
Okay, thank you, Representative Sather. And if Captain Blake Circle is available, because I think there is a purpose for why they use one terminology versus another terminology. Captain Blake Circle, are you available?
I am. Through the chair, Captain Blake Circle, the Alaska National Guard. On a number of these, it doesn't matter. The reason it doesn't matter whether they are illegal drugs or legal drugs is the result in incapacitation is the problem. You can be, for example, incapacitated due to NyQuil or some such drug to where you could not perform your duties. And that is the problem that some of these sections address. So where it says only drug and not illegal drug, the reason is that we are trying to address even instances where a soldier may be taking what is a legal drug, but it causes incapacitation such that they could not perform their duties. Does that answer your question?
It does answer the question in the face of the chair, but so the underlying question still remains, could there be language used consistently such as, for example, just a drug or an illegal drug such that it results in incapacitation?
Captain Blake Circle, did you hear that?
I did, and I don't have the amendment in front of me, so I apologize.
Okay, we'll continue on, and then we'll walk through each one of these individually. So I got Representative Reinbold, Representative Vice Chair Ledoux, and then Representative Parrish. Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so I stepped out a little bit earlier. I had that exact same concern, so I had quite an in-depth conversation with Ledge Legal. And basically, between my staff and I and talking to Ledge Legal, what we believe would be a friendly conceptual amendment would be to delete the word a drug and to add, and that would be on line 2, 5, and line 15, and then add an illicit substance or a controlled substance.
Okay, we'll take one of these.
That changes the meeting.
Okay, Representative Ledoux.
All right, I'm like thoroughly confused right now. I mean, I'm looking at the amendment, but then I'm also looking at the bill as it was written. And so I'm seeing on line 4, as a result of page 12, the paren 2, as a result of indulgence in any alcoholic beverage or drug. So would that include somebody who has taken a prescription drug with no criminal intent? Mm-hmm. Or even a non-prescription drug mm-hmm. with no criminal intent? And I mean, what I don't want to see, if somebody falls asleep on duty, that's one thing. But if they've actually just taken Sudafed or something where they have to be aware that they could go asleep, but they aren't asleep, I don't want to see somebody prosecuted for taking cold medication unless it's actually unless they were like overtaking it or something just for the fun of it. And I'm just a little bit concerned with how that reads in the statute as we now have it even before the amendment.
Okay, we have Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole with us with the Military and Veterans Affairs. With the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And then we also have Lieutenant Colonel Chris Reaver and Captain Blake Circle. You want to explain why drug is written in this portion? Does it include all drugs, including legal and illegal, and prescribed and non-prescribed?
For the record, Deputy Commissioner Dole, through the Chair, Representative Ledoux, the concern from the Department is any substance that renders a individual unable to safely operate an aircraft or a machine gun or other lethal instrumentality. We would note in the case of things like Sudafed, there's a warning on the box, and I'm one of those prone to fatigue from Sudafed, so I read that warning carefully. But even for an over-the-counter drug, if it renders them incapacitated, given the warnings on there, and with the military, there are avenues to say, I'm sick, I'm taking this medication. It says don't operate heavy machinery. If you're not fit for duty, the solution is not to ignore the warnings on the label. It's to report to your supervisor that you're medically unable to perform the duty at that time. Mm-hmm. We call it duties not involving flight or DNF for pilots. And virtually anyone in the military who has required medication for a medical purpose can report to their supervisor that they're unable to perform the duty because of the medication, and it's not actionable.
Follow up.
But this doesn't just cover people who are flying planes and are using other heavy equipment. This would mean, for example, Commissioner, if you took a Sudafed and you were feeling a little bit sleepy, that you could be prosecuted for a crime. And I'm just not certain that that's necessarily where we or you may want to go.
Through the Chair, Representative Ledoux, for the record, Deputy Commissioner Dole, if I'm driving when I'm fatigued, when there's a warning on the label that says this may make you drowsy, I should be prosecuted in that case. With the equipment we use and the operating parameters that the military uses it in, there's a heightened standard of responsibility. That's why they're given that free out. If medically they're unable to do something, they report it and they don't have to.
If, follow up, you're driving. Well, but I'm thinking that if you were simply attending a committee meeting,
hang on. If the department answered and if somebody else wants to answer afterwards, go ahead. I mean, was that a comment?
Yes.
That was a comment? Okay. I have Representative Parrish and Representative Sponholz, but I see Representative Sponholz would like to answer this. Go ahead, Representative Sponholz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on that point, it says pretty clearly here on page 12, line 4, you know, as a result of indulgence in any alcoholic beverage or drug is unable to properly perform the member's duty. So you wouldn't necessarily, I mean, the way I read this is you wouldn't be prosecuted for taking Sudafed and being a little drowsy. You would be prosecuted for, you know, taking an inappropriate level of Sudafed, which rendered you incapable of performing your duties and not taking advantage of the procedure, which allows you to not work. Am I, maybe Mr. Deputy Commissioner Dole could confirm whether or not that reading is proper.
Through the Chair, Representative Sponholz, Deputy Commissioner Dole, in our case, properly perform the duties would be the test, and whether or not there was an improper amount taken. If I was unable to properly testify here because I was asleep in the back corner of the room, I would be, and I was in the military, I would be improperly performing my duties. At that point, it would be actionable because the government had trusted me with the responsibility and I was derelict in my duties.
Follow-up, Representative.
Well, you know, during my tenure here, I've seen numbers of people fall, you know, not off in a committee meeting. And while it's not a great idea to not off in a committee meeting, or on the floor, or in caucus, or where have you, that I've seen various people not off, I'm not really sure that that should rise to the level of being put in jail.
And if I may add that the original language in 2605-860 is just drunk on duty. What this is doing is adding any other type of incapacitating offenses. And I will say that we do hold our military a little bit higher standard when it comes to the safety, security, and protection that is required of them. And so you're right, nodding off in a committee room may not be as severe as nodding off at a lookout site or other active duties that may need people being alert to protect the platoon and ultimately protect our nation. I got Representative Parrish, Representative Sponholz, Representative Rauscher, and Representative Sadler. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, and a little bit more on that theme. The word indulgence on page 12, line 3, jumps out at me. Perhaps you could explain how you would be inclined to interpret indulgence in the context of, well, in this context, of determining whether a member had indeed indulged.
Through the Chair, Representative Parrish, I would defer to Webster's dictionary offhand for defining indulgence, but I believe it connotates, as I sit here, a voluntarily partaking of a substance that isn't required, but it's an option. You're doing it because you want to feel better.
Thank you. And if I may follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The remarks from Representative Sponholz are particularly well taken. And I wonder if we shouldn't look at the language here. A member of a militia other than the sentinel or lookout who is found under the influence of alcohol, the amendment adds language, or a drug while on duty, or, and then it refers to the condition of being unable to adequately perform one's duty. So, unfortunately, under a very strict reading, which I think we should be wary of, under a very strict reading, were I to take a Tylenol and were people to be aware that I'd taken that drug while on duty, I would be under its influence, even if it did not result in any loss of capacity on my part. I would think that in order to get at the spirit of what we're going for, it might be more useful to say under the influence of alcohol or a controlled substance, or perhaps an illicit substance. And then the rest, I think, is exactly as it ought to be, or as a result of indulgence in any alcoholic beverage or drug, is able to properly perform the member's duty. That is exactly as it should be, because in the event that someone takes a whole bunch of NyQuil, they might be unable to properly perform their duty. And then later on that page, I believe I might have to come back to it. Or controlled substance, page 3. Sorry, no. Or anything. Oh yes, here we are. Page 12, line 9. A member who, while a prisoner, is drunk or under the influence of a controlled substance. Oh, that's perfectly good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I got Representative Sponholz, Rauscher, Sadler, Reinbold, and then Vice Chair Ledoux. Representative Sponholz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two comments here. One was I liked Representative Parrish's comment about the possibility of taking on line page 12, line 3, where we're inserting or a drug, potentially put in, you know, inserting instead of a drug, say a controlled substance. That's a possibility. I think that's interesting. Second, I wanted to just draw an attention to what I think may be just a modest drafting error, and that's on the amendment where it says page 12, line 9. I think it actually means line 10 is actually the intended spot for the amendment.
Yeah, I got lost
for that. Yeah. So that may be a friendly amendment to the amendment. Because it's inserting this content that says insert this in the subsection controlled substance has the meaning given in, you know, AS 26.05. It's supposed to come after the word direct, which is actually on line 10.
Okay, so we're looking at line 7 of the amendment.
Looking at line 10 of the amendment.
Oh, line 10 of the amendment. I'm sorry, following direct.
My apologies, I wasn't clear.
Okay, I see that. Okay. Any further discussions on amendment number 1? Okay, Representative Rauscher.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm going to take my poke at what we were talking about from the representative from Muldoon. So, if you were to actually take, and I'm kind of giving credence to where the representative from Juneau is going, if you were to take a drug because you have a cold and you want to be able to do your job better, because indulgence actually, according to the dictionary, says satisfaction, gratification, and fulfillment. So if you're taking this drug to actually do perform your duty and not for those reasons, and say you get hit by a car while you're on the seminal duty, you didn't do anything wrong, but you're going to go to the hospital and you're going to get a blood test, and it's going to show that you have this in your system. So, which is why I kind of agree with the representative from Juneau, because though the case could be made, you didn't jump out of the way or whatever, that really wasn't hampering you doing your duty unless they really wanted them to push that. So I guess I'm saying that I think having the definition where the representative from Juneau was going would be a better clarification. In my opinion, though, I guess you can take too much Sudafed and be impaired also. But I guess I'm just trying. I've seen people drive and they get caught with taking NyQuil or something like that just for a traffic ticket. But it happens.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. Any comment, Deputy Commissioner?
Through Mr. Chair, for the record, Deputy Commissioner Dole, the department's position remains any substance that or mind-altering substance is troublesome for the duties service members are doing or may be called upon to do. The illicit or controlled is of some concern to the extent that synthetics drugs are coming out faster than they can be regulated with the same deleterious effects and impairment caused by them. Challenge that I believe the if we were in the Hess committee we would be talking about instead here today. It is a race to keep up with regulating and controlling substances. In looking at this, there is the voluntary decision. Indulgence does show that an individual has decided to take the drug. It hasn't been slipped into their drink like a Mickey, and then they've come to duty and not known it was there. And they've made a decision that they know drugs are in their system, and they're still going to attempt to perform military duties. We believe that in that case, for the person crossing the street, if they weren't jaywalking, to take Representative Rauscher's example, they would not be, they'd still be performing their duties. It would not be actionable under this section. If they went stumbling out into the street, however, it would be a different scenario. We support the amendment and believe the emphasis should be on the mind-altering or just a substance there with as proposed in the amendment. We recognize there may be some consistency issues in the amendment to work through. We think the illicit is an issue, and also even a lawfully prescribed drug, if an individual is impaired by it and there are warnings that they could be impaired by it, they should not be doing those duties. We talked about Sudafed. If I was prescribed Vicodin and was trying to do something with all the warnings on that, it would be a very different scenario.
And let me add that this is as a result. If something were to happen where a soldier was unable to properly perform the member's duty as a result of taking these things, that's what this is all about. This isn't about whether they took it or not. It's whether that the accident happened as a result of them taking it. So let's just make that very clear. I got Representative Sather, Reingold, and then Vice Chair Ledoux.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the record, I want to make sure that the record reflects that the friendly amendment number one to amendment one, that being on page one of amendment one, line 10, changes the number nine to the number 10. I just want to make sure that was actually...
Was that actually moved? Was there a suggestion? Did you actually move it?
I moved it like a long time ago.
Okay. I heard that looks like it needed to be changed. I did not hear an official movement.
Would you like a motion?
Yes, just go ahead and take that motion and get that out of the way.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion to amend Amendment 1 on line 10 to change the language from page 12, line 9 to page 12, line 10.
Okay, are there any objections? Here, no objections. Amendment number one to amendment number one is adopted.
Yeah, sure.
Representative Sather.
And to the substance of my comments, I would offer a general conceptual amendment that any place there's reference to consumption of a drug, non-alcoholic beverage, but to a drug, we insert language, something to the effect of, or as a result of consumption of any substance, a member is unable to properly perform the member's duty. And I would actually prefer not to wordsmith it at the committee table. I would almost suggest that we can come back and work on this kind of thing afterwards and see if we can get it smoothed out.
Okay, so I hear amendment. Can you restate your amendment, please?
So my conceptual amendment to Amendment 1 is where there is reference in the amendment to consumption of drugs or indulgence in drugs, we substitute language something along the lines of or as a result of consumption of any substance, comma, a member is unable to properly perform the member's duty.
Okay, I'm going to object. I believe that the reason why we have drug in here is not that we'll go through this item by item, but I think the reason why we have drug in some of these situations is that we don't want the person to be under any influence, no matter if they were able to perform the duties or not perform the duties. So there's conditions of that. So I don't want to make every time we have a drug reference that we're conditionalizing it. And if I may have either Lieutenant Colonel Weaver or Captain Blake circle or our Deputy Commissioner respond. Because I think that's what we need to do, is we need to take these one by one, because I think there is a reason why we have one versus the other. So this, if you guys don't mind, let's take up page 10, line 15, making sure that we're okay with that first item. So page 10, line 15.
Page 10, line 15.
Of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at, right now, a member of the militia, and I'm reading it out loud because we have some people online that do not have the amendment in front of them. So section 16, just jump it up to line 13, section 16 AS 2605.75 is amended by adding a new subsection to read. A member of the militia who unlawfully drinks an alcoholic beverage with a prisoner may be punished up to 1 year of confinement. And so what this amendment would do is, following prisoner, add in, or unlawfully uses a drug with a prisoner. So I think that the drug right there is very specific, that it's unlawfully use it. There may be conditions where they can lawfully use it. Seems any questions on that one? Does that sound reasonable, everybody?
Well, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Sadler.
I would kick that to the JAG, Lieutenant Colonel, to see if that fits, if it works.
To Lieutenant Colonel Chris Weaver, are you following along with us? And can you hear us? Still show him online, but we may have lost Lieutenant Colonel Weaver. How about Captain Blake Circle?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, and who's speaking?
This is Captain Blake Circle with the Alaska National Guard, Judge Advocate, and through the chair, we're adding or unlawfully using a drug with a prisoner. The assessment that I heard earlier is correct, that there may be instances where the member of the militia may be able to lawfully use a drug, whether that be Tylenol or whatever else, in that situation. So we do have that qualifier in there would address those instances.
Good.
Okay, so is there any problems or any suggestions for lines 4 through 5 on amendment number 1?
4 through 5. Except we are on line 15.
We're moving to page
27.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Jumping back up. Lines 1 or 2 with amendment number 1.
Mr. Chair, a question?
Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is, I'm not quite sure how to word this best. When I see that they can be punished for up to a year for unlawfully using a drug with a prisoner, I have to wonder, is it in addition to other penalties which may be prescribed by law? Is that perhaps Representative Ledoux, you were a lawyer, or perhaps we've got some other counsel?
That's legal. I think Commissioner Dole actually is a lawyer.
Oh, wonderful.
Commissioner Dole.
Through the chair, Representative Parrish. Because of double jeopardy issues, this would be either a criminal prosecution or militarily or in civilian courts. It's not both. One or the other would prosecute in that case. The particular language here arises because when a prisoner is in a custodial relationship, all drugs that they are taking must be approved through a certain medical process, not just illicit drugs, but all drugs in that case.
I see. Follow up. So, Commissioner Dole, would there be, at whose discretion would it be either prosecuted under the court martial or in civilian law?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, Deputy Commissioner Dole, for the record, realizing sitting to your left is the author of the original HB 126. However, the civilian courts have the first right of refusal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Rangel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and this issue is a big one for me. This I brought this up last week, and this immediately was a red flag in this bill. So I will tell you personally, I have a problem with the word drug. I just do. I just think it's way too broad, and I also have an issue with the prisoner. I mean, can't this be individually as well, or does it have to be with the prisoner? So, you know, those are two issues that I have. And I did do a friendly conceptual amendment on line 2, 5, and 15 to delete a drug and put in an illicit or controlled substance like 20 minutes ago. So, you know, that to me was a friendly amendment a while back, which I'm still very convinced that it's important to do. But I have appreciated, you know, the discussion that was going on. But I think a drug is way too broad.
And if I may, Representative Reinbold, I heard you bring up a suggestion. I did not hear a formal movement, so I apologize if there was a formal movement in here that I didn't catch. Representative Dole, Commissioner Dole.
through the chair, Representative Reinbold, first, the department thanks you for drawing attention to this important issue a week ago so that we could have this dialogue. In terms of the discussion of uses with a prisoner, that is a separate type of offense rather than a duty-performing impairment. That is any unlawful use of a drug with a prisoner, regardless of whether or not one's duty is impaired at that point, is actionable on its face because it's undermining good order and discipline. Just that sort of relationship between a prisoner and a person in charge of keeping the prisoner a prisoner is unacceptable, which is why it's a separate provision than the ones in terms of the duty issues there. I understand the concern about how we define drug or how we define the illicit or controlled substance, and the concern the department has, there are substances that can be used for mind-altering purposes that may not be on a schedule banned or controlled.
Representative Rambo, would you like to move an amendment?
Yes. Can I respond to him really quickly?
Sure.
Okay. So basically, to me, an illicit is an illicit drug, and I think maybe we need a technical definition, but that, even if it's morphed, it's still an illicit mind-altering substance. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to go back to the amendment on the line numbers on the page, not the on our bill, on line 2, line 5, and line 15, in the very left column, anytime where it says a drug, I want to delete that and replace it with an illicit or controlled substance.
Object.
Here we have an amendment. I'm going to restate amendment number 2 to amendment number 1. Anytime that there is a reference to drug in amendment number 1, which is in line 2, line 5, on just one page on amendment number 1.
On the amendment.
Just on the amendment. A single page. Page 1. On lines 2, 5, and 15, where we see the word drug, we replace the word drug with illicit substance.
Illicit or controlled substance.
Illicit substance or controlled. And controlled or controlled?
Illicit or controlled substance.
Or controlled substance. And we have an objection. Representative Sponholz.
I have a question about the definition of illicit. And I see that Representative Parrish has a dictionary out. Is there a specific legal definition? Is that something we need ledge legal from, or can we simply use the dictionary? Protocol?
I don't know if we have our Captain Blake Circle online that can, Deputy Commissioner Dole, who happens to be attorney as well, or Lieutenant Colonel Chris Beaver, whoever would like to answer it. What do we know about the term illicit?
Through the chair, Mr. Chair, Deputy Commissioner Dole, just doing research by Google while sitting here, I note that it means forbidden by law, rules, or regulation is kind of the common understanding of the term.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the Alaska statutes with me at the table here to see if it is more specifically defined somewhere within the substance, the substances there.
Okay.
So with the amendment before us, will we have illicit or controlled substance. That pretty much covers all drugs. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Deputy Commissioner Dole, controlled would be those that are controlled, such as the scheduled narcotics. Illicit is forbidden by law, rules, or regulation. If we go back to the Sudafed example, Sudafed is not forbidden by law, rules, or regulation on its face. Use of it in a duty-impairing way would be, but not just on its face, it is not forbidden.
Okay, Representative Reinbold, is that your intention, is to exclude such drugs such as Sudafed?
My intention is to not make it so broad that it includes everything. And I was actually pointing to the, I need to see the definition in the, somebody has the title.
Mr. Speaker, if I may.
The Geddes.
Okay, just take a quick Geddes.
Not permitted.
Come back on the record. It is now 2:47 p.m. in the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee. We have Amendment Number 2 to Amendment Number 1. We're realizing that there might be some other things that we may need to fix. Representative Sponholz.
I remove my objection.
To
Amendment Number 2 to Amendment Number 1, and then are you going to withdraw it?
And then Representative Reinbold.
Okay, well, I guess I am going to withdraw the amendment right now to address the concerns of the committee so that we can redraft your amendment.
So here's the will of the chair. I would like to go through and point out all the problems that we can see with amendment number one and any other additional language that we can see as we go through amendment number one that might be an original bill so that we can properly draft amendment number one. And then, so let's go through that real quick. So, Representative Ledoux.
All right. I've already addressed this or thing.
Well, please address it on the record.
Oh, okay. So as I'm looking at this thing, the whole problem is, I mean, you've got in one, which is kind of strict liability, whether if you're under the influence of something. So, whereas two. Paren 2, you've got to be impaired. So I agree with you, or I agree with the department, that if somebody is impaired, even if it's Sudafed, that they shouldn't be on duty. But if it's your strict liability, then it would seem to me that it makes sense to say alcohol or probably not illicit, but I mean something that gets the idea that it's an illegal substance that you want strict liability for if you're on duty. And just one more little glitch to throw into this thing. How do we want to deal with marijuana, which is illegal under federal law, but is legal under state law? And I don't have a solution to this, but I just want to point out, you know, that we actually do need to consider it. And I don't have anything else that I really wanted to say about this right
now. Okay, thank you, Vice Chair. Deputy Commissioner Dole, you mind responding?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, for the record, Deputy Commissioner Dole, looking at page 12 of the original bill, the first section, 2605-860, as you note, it connotates two different ways somebody other than a sentinel could be in violation. One is for influence of alcohol, and I believe a drug in that case would mirror the illicit or controlled substance as Representative Reinbold offered earlier. For instance, if somebody has a random urinalysis while on duty, there's a list of substances that we know they're not allowed to have in there, those controlled substances. So I think that our intent there is for the random urinalysis example, that there's a defined list of things they can't take. And as you note, that or is not, it's or this other condition, and that's where if whatever substance you take and has impaired your ability to do what you're supposed to. So it would be apropos in that case, if we don't want to use drug, use perhaps mind-altering substance or impairing substance or something like that to capture something broader than just the controlled drugs, to capture the deputy commissioner on Sudafed who's unable to perform his duties if he's in a military status.
And then if I may, real quick, I would like to ask Representative Reinbold, in this, in the line 4 of the bill, where we say alcoholic beverage or drug, which means illegal or not, is that okay with you leaving drug there, or is you want to see that, or would you like to replace that with a different terminology?
My recommendation would be illicit or controlled substance. I just think drug is super broad. And that's why where I'm concerned with, but I'm happy. I've talked to Ledge Legal, and I just.
Okay, I'm referring not to the amendment. I'm referring to line 4 of the bill.
Page 12?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Page 12, line 4. Because there, okay, so the first what amendment number 1 was attempting to do was add alcohol or drug in line 3. And I think it does need to be spelled out because we're not talking about illegal drugs either. We're talking about illicit or controlled substances. So your amendment to your original amendment number 2 to amendment number 1 made sense right there. Mm-hmm. What I'm asking is looking further on the line after beverage or drug, mm-hmm. which would encompass the those drugs that are legal, that are over-the-counter, that you can take, but happens to impair your ability to do your work, is that good enough terminology to encompass all of that for you?
Mr. Chairman, I'd actually have to put a little bit more thought into it.
Sure.
Because that was part of my amendment.
And if you don't mind, Representative Sandler, can I ask you the same question? Because I know we had concerns with where we use drug and some of this stuff. How does that sound to you?
Mr. Chair, we have begun a process of basically going down each paired line of the Amendment 1 just to see if the application of the operative words, I'll say, to each individual circumstance was appropriate or not. My understanding was we had generally gotten agreement on the committee, although we had not made a vote for the first pair on line 1 and 2, and then we were subsumed by the proposal for an omnibus amendment to change drugs. So I guess I don't feel comfortable doing this unless I would have the legislative drafters, so I'm going to recuse myself from the discussion.
Okay, and if I may, Representative Sather, this isn't part of the amendment. This is just the line 4 as we were looking at this and clarifying what we meant with line 3, adding drug in there, but now maybe changing that to illicit or controlled substance. So that's what I was referring to.
I appreciate your Mr. Chair. I think if drug is conditioned by, so is unable to properly perform the member's duty, you can call anything you want to, if that's the test and that's the standard. So I'm good either way. I would support illicit if it achieves it. I would support drug if it achieves it. I think either one conditioned by is unable to perform the member's duty makes either one acceptable.
And thank you, Representative Sally. You may have stepped out, but it's the chair's wish to work on amendment number 1, set this aside, and get it right, so we're just kind of going through everything generally right now. Okay, Representative Parrish and Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, I think that the adjustments contemplated thus far on page 12 for lines 3 and 4 are very sensible. I do think that we would want to revisit page 12, line 13. A sentinel or lookout who's found under the influence of alcohol or a drug or sleeping in the sentinel or lookout's post, just in the same light that we did for section 2605860, in order to capture the nuance, or a controlled substance or other drug which would tend to impair them in the performance of their duties. Just try to tie together the two critical clauses which were brought to our attention by the Deputy Commissioner. One being the problem of people using illicit substances, and the other being them using perfectly legal substances which could tend to impair them in the performance of their duties without the permission of, well, without perhaps the knowledge of their medical officer. And generally a medical officer would
give them a not fit for duty chit and let them tend to their health under extreme conditions, such as during a natural disaster. I think that the courts would tend to take that into account if someone sprained an ankle but still wanted to take an Advil and go out and keep on working. That's all. That's what I've got to request for the modification in section 23.
Thank you, Representative Parrish, Representative Reinbold, and Representative Rocher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do feel like I'm getting in the weeds, but I did sell pharmaceuticals for about 10 years, so this is a very sensitive issue for me. And one thing, someone could have, you know, a reaction to a drug, you know, and that's impairing their ability. And so I don't know if that is included in here or not, but some people have adverse reactions. I know I'm getting into the weeds here, but I think that's one of the reasons why I'm so sensitive to the illicit substance. Part, you know, of this, illegal or illicit, is just very, very important words. In my opinion, I just think drug is just a too broad, because this literally can encompass literally everything. Could be interpreted depending on, you know, how you define drug. So, and when I looked at this, is at this section where it says section 2605870. Wrongful use of possession, I'm really glad that is down here lower under line 12, which I think is very, very important, but I still think that this is a very important discussion, and I do want to say thank you for bringing the amendment forward. And I'm sorry I didn't come to your office to work with you harder on this issue. That's my biggest regret today right now, is that I should have come and talked to your office. So
no regrets. This is all part of the committee process, and this is exercising some great suggestions. So, on the table right now, we have a motion. Our amendment number one is moved. I'm going to hold it. The amendment, as well as the bill itself. But real quick, before we adjourn, Representative Rauscher.
Thank you very much, through the chair. I just want to know, is there a section of the law that deals with prisoners? Giving a prisoner drugs.
And if I may, Representative Rauscher, it's just that one section right there where we're talking about the influence, but someone who's guarding a prisoner, you know, who has to be taking with the prisoner, and this is basically just...
prisoner drugs is not addressed here, and not doing drugs with him.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, doing drugs with the prisoner is addressed in here in HB 307 in terms of standing orders and... just giving drugs to a prisoner is addressed in the original legislation.
So I guess what I'm asking for is, what's the need for this paragraph if we're giving a... if we have a paragraph that covers you while you're on duty, a couple paragraphs later, what's this one for if you can't give the drug to a prisoner in some other section, and then a section moving forward in about three or four paragraphs, you can't do drugs while you're on duty? Why is this section needed? That's my only question.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, the short answer is it's a different count of a higher penalty level because of the negative effects it has on good order and discipline.
Is that clarified, Representative Rauscher? It's a bigger violation for doing that under that circumstance. Okay, so right now I'm going to call. Hang on, real quick, just a bit of housekeeping. Our next meeting will be Thursday, February 8th, in which case we're taking up the Declaration of Honor and also taking up House Bill 194, the Commission Corps in the United States Public Health Service and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Commissioned Officer Corps designated as veterans. And we stand adjourned at 3 o'clock.